بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الواحد الأحد الفرد الصمد الذي لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفوا أحد. أحمده سبحانه وتعالى وأثني عليه الخير كله، أحمده حمد الشاكرين وأستغفره استغفار المذنبين المقصرين، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له. بعث محمدا صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون ولو كره الكافرون، وكفى بالله شهيدا. أما بعد، dear respected brothers and sisters, I think the topic today that we are going to discuss is a very, very important topic, is a very key topic that we as Muslims in the West, in fact, Muslims now facing the challenge of modernity, Muslims living in this time and age, are facing. So it's a very essential topic, very key topic that we need to understand it. And we need to understand this challenge. We need to understand how to respond to it. We need to understand what is right, what is wrong regarding that. To be honest with you, brothers and sisters, I don't think that Islam is facing any challenge from the external enemies. I don't also believe that, although Muslims being persecuted, etc., being tortured by others, Muslim lands being invaded, but I think that Muslims land or Muslim lands wouldn't be invaded except our hearts and minds have been already invaded. And that's why we need to free our hearts and minds before we free our lands. And unless we are able to free our minds and our hearts, we wouldn't be able to do so. This is one thing. We are suffering now as Muslims from inferiority complex. Unless we feel, as Muslims, we feel victorious, we will never be victorious. And that's why if you look at the discourse of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam, you wouldn't see that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam would accept from his companions to feel defeated at any point of time. Even in Mecca period, when the Sahaba used to be tortured, persecuted, etc., and they used to come to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sahbihi wasallam, and all of us know the story of Sahih al-Bukhari, when Khabbab ibn al-Arat and other companions came to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sahbihi wasallam and said, haven't you seen what we are facing? Why don't you ask Allah jalla wa ala to give us victory? The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam became angry, and then the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam told them, what's wrong with you? The people before you, they used to be tortured, and they used to face more hardship than the hardship that you were facing, and Allah Jalla wa Ala perfected their religion, and they did not leave their religion. By Allah, Allah will perfect and complete your religion until the woman traveler travels from Hadramaut to Sana'a, fears no one except Allah Jalla wa Ala and the goal or the wall for her cattle. ولكنكم قوم تستعجلون, but you are so hasty in asking for victory. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not sympathize with them at that point, because he understands that he is nourishing, he is developing leaders, and leaders should not live with a defeated mentality. So the point is, as if we don't free ourselves, and if we don't have this victorious mentality, we will never be victorious, and we will be continuously defeated. So this is, and what is the real challenge that we are facing? What is the real defeat? The real defeat we are facing, brothers and sisters, is that we feel that Islam is not the best religion. Islam is not the best way of life. Islam is not bringing solutions for our problems. We need to twist Islam, we need to change Islam, we need to modify Islam, we need to modernize Islam in order for Islam to fit in the lifestyle that we are living in, or in the current Western context, or in the current context, in order for Islam to develop. That itself is a defeat. And feeling or having that feel, we will never progress, and Islam will never bring solutions for the problems of humanity. So it is a very key topic, brothers and sisters, and I'm sure that within 30 minutes we can't address this topic. However, we will try to maybe highlight some features that enable us to understand this topic. When we talk about the challenge of modernity, first of all, let us define modernity. If we want to talk about this topic from an academic perspective, what is the definition of modernity? Modernity, it is a description of the development in science, technology that is taking place at any point of time. Modernity is a description of any development in science and technology that is taking place at any point of time. And this definition is quite important because now we think that we are at the top of modernity. 20 years ago, we used to think that we are at the top of modernity. Now, because maybe we have iPhone 4, we have iPad, we have all of this technology, we think that we have reached the top of modernity. 20 years ago, we didn't have internet, we didn't have iPhone, we didn't have maybe mobile phones, and we used to think that we are at the top of modernity. This means that modernity is a very relative concept. It's not a fixed description, or it is not something that is fixed. It is not a description of something that is fixed. It keeps changing. In fact, when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam came to the Arabs in Jahiliyyah, at that time they used to believe that they are living in modernity because they haven't seen what may come in the future. So they thought that in terms of science, technology, maybe art, maybe other disciplines, they thought that, or they used to think that they have captured modernity. Now this is modernity. Once we talk about the challenge of modernity, what do we mean by that? Islam and the challenge of modernity. What do we mean by that? Islam, by nature, has two main types of concepts, rulings, and maybe you can say values. Some concepts, rulings, that do not change, do not accept any change. And some rulings that have some flexibility to change or to adapt with changes. Just remember this. Fixed rulings that cannot be changed, and some flexible rulings that can be changed. Now, we are living in this time and age, and there are so many new things that we are facing, and those new things that we are facing, or humanity in general is facing, we haven't seen them before. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam haven't seen them before. Islam has not seen them before. So how Islam can deal with these new things? For example, now we have communication. So we can get married through maybe internet. Maybe the husband in India and the wife is in America and the wali maybe is living in Alaska and the two witnesses are living in Russia. So can we have a marriage contract as such where we are sitting maybe facing a mobile phone or with cameras, and so the husband will see the groom, or the bride will see the groom, and the witnesses will be witnessing this, and maybe the imam and the qadi is somewhere else. Maybe he is in Mecca, okay, because they want to have the blessings of Mecca. Can we have this kind of marriage or not? This is something new. Islam has not spoken literally about this. This is a challenge. Now we can travel from one country to another country in the other part of the world within maybe a few hours. Is this considered to be safar, traveling? Can we use all the excuses of traveling and we can implement them on this situation? Now we don't deal with gold and silver anymore. We rarely deal with them. We deal with pounds, dollars, etc. So how can we deal with those kind of currency, the new currency that has come and it was not there before? So these are the challenges. So this is what we say the challenge of modernity. Of course, if we just describe more about modernity, we will go too crazy about that, because now maybe you have read about that boy who donated his sperm to his aunt. Have you read about it? No, recently, 2 days ago, just 2 days ago, he donated his sperm to his lesbian aunt. And his parents later, when he died on his 20s, and they discovered that he has done this, and then it relieved them because he was a humanitarian person and he has donated the sperm to his aunt. Now later on, because of modernity, we might speak about a person donating his sperm to his sister. Or maybe, maybe a person might donate his sperm to who? To his mother. Later on, we might say, we might face a new situation where modernity is producing something new. Okay, this person who donated the sperm to his aunt, why doesn't he have sexual relation with his aunt in order to, for his aunt to enjoy being mother to his lesbian aunt? Why doesn't he have sexual relation with his mother in order to donate the sperm? And instead of using science and technology to donate the sperm to his mother, it's very simple. He can have a sexual relationship with his mother, so his mother can conceive and he can fulfill her needs. Modernity can take us very, in a very extreme sort of lifestyle. Now, what stops modernity? God knows. How Islam can deal with this, with these challenges? How Islam can deal with these modernized things? Can we say that? We have two scenarios. We can say that Islam has to adopt all these changes because these changes are essential for modernity and we cannot stop them in favor of Islam. The other scenario is to say no, Islam has to suppress all of these developments in order for us not to go to an extreme level of modernity. These are two scenarios. Now you know that Islam by nature, as we said, that there are certain parts, certain concepts, certain rulings of Islam that are fixed. You cannot change them. And on the other side, Islam gave us certain flexibility in terms of certain rulings in order to adapt with those changes. So how Islam dealt with those changes? Let us take the example of Salah. Now Salah, Allah Jalla wa Ala commanded us to have five prayers every day. Those five prayers have to be performed in a very fixed interval period of time. And those five prayers, we cannot leave them under any circumstance. However, let us look at the timing of Salah. Fajr has his own time, its own time, Dhuhr, Asr, etc., etc. However, Islam gave us some flexibility because Islam knows, Allah knows. وَاللَّهُ خَلَقَكُمْ وَمَا تَعْمَلُونَ وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ وَأَنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ Allah knows and you don't know. So, Allah Jalla wa Ala legislated the salawat that in order to be very flexible or flexible enough to accommodate some of the changes that we might face because he knows that we will face those changes. So he allowed us to combine between Dhuhr and Asr and Maghrib and Isha. But Allah Jalla wa Ala knows that we will have some difficulty in terms of waking up for Fajr. Or because of modernity, we might not be able to pray Fajr on time. However, he said Fajr should not be under any circumstance combined with any other Salah. So within Salah, there are some flexibility. However, there are fixed rulings that we cannot change them under any circumstance. Okay, what about those changes that we are facing in terms of modernity? What can we do with them? If we can't pray Fajr on time, for example, people start working before Fajr and they have to travel, etc. So let us have maybe a liberalized form of Islam where we can say we don't need to pray Fajr, or let us change the time of Fajr because of modernity. Can we do that or not? This is the question. This is one of the a simple form of challenge. We say no. Because of what? Because we knew that Allah Jalla wa Ala gave some flexibility in terms of the time of Dhuhr, but he did not give any any flexibility in terms of the time of Fajr. So we understood that he wants us to change modernity to suit Fajr, not Fajr timing to suit modernity. I hope that this point is clear, because this is the crux of the point. Allah Jalla wa Ala knows what will happen. Is that true or not? Does Allah Jalla wa Ala know, or did Allah Jalla wa Ala know from the past what will happen? Of course, he knew. He knew everything. Wallahu ya'lamu wa antum la ta'lamun. Walillahi ghaibu as-samawati wal ard. The unseen belongs to Allah Jalla wa Ala. And خلقكم وما تعملون. He is the one who created modernity. So he knew that we will face some difficulty in terms of Fajr, and there will be some circumstances. He, Jalla wa Ala, wants us to keep Fajr timing on its original time, in its time that has been revealed 1400 years ago, and he knows that we can, as human beings, not just Muslims, we can produce certain means to change modernity to another form of modernity that is suitable for Islam. And this is the point. And as we always say, that modernity is the product of human beings. So we control modernity. Modernity does not control us. So if we control modernity, then we can change modernity to fit into Islam. And that is the concept that we are talking about. If we understand that within Islam there is enough flexibility to accommodate certain modern things, then we don't mind. But if we understood that, no, these are fixed concepts, we cannot change them, then we should change modernity, science, technology, etc., to fit into Islam. For example, let us take another example in terms of financial activities. Now, in the past, we used to deal, or Muslims or people used to deal with gold and silver. They don't know the normal currency system. So now we don't deal with gold and silver anymore. So how can we deal with this new situation? Shall we say that riba is not applicable in normal paper money, as some people, very few people said, because this is something modern. We cannot deal with it, so let us just leave it, and let us just confine riba to exchanging gold for gold, or silver for silver, or other commodities. But now exchanging dollars for pounds, or dollars for more dollars, that has nothing to do with riba. Can we do this? If we can do this, then we would say again that zakah was obligatory in gold and silver. Can we say that now we don't own gold and silver anymore, so zakah is not obligatory in paper money that we have? This is a challenge. How can we deal with this situation? We go back to the concept of exchanging gold for gold, or gold for silver, and we try to understand what is the message, what is the underlying message, or the underlying effective cause that Allah Jalla wa Ala wanted us to implement, irrespective of the manifestation of that underlining effective cause. We need to understand that. And once we understand it, we can implement it in different manifestations. So modernity, in this example, is just a manifestation of the underlying effective cause. So we understood that it is not allowed to exchange gold for more gold, because the underlining principle is exchanging money or currency for a bigger amount of the same currency. So whenever we have a currency, then riba is applicable. So if someone were to say, but now we cannot live without riba, we say, no, we need, as human beings, we are the people who produced riba in the current form. We have to produce enough financial instruments and products to stop riba in order to fit into Islam, not Islam to fit into the current financial system. I hope that this point is clear. These are two examples. We can give many of those examples, but just because of time constraints. Now, there is a question, a very, very important question. Why do we need to do this? Why do we need to do this? Why do we need to say that, well, if Islam is flexible, or the flexible rulings within Islam, we can use them to adopt certain changes. But those fixed rulings within Islam, we have to change what is happening in modernity in order to fit into those fixed rulings. Why don't we say that any Islamic principle or ruling can be changed or modernized or maybe liberalized in order to fit into what? Into the modern context, to fit within modernity. Why can't we say this? As many Muslims, by the way, they say this. And because we are facing so many challenges, especially Muslims in the West, then many people start to say this. We can't live, we can't progress unless we have this scenario. Please, brothers and sisters, we need to think about this. And the answer is as follows. We have to understand, brothers and sisters, the nature of Islam. What is Islam? And what is the purpose of Islam? I believe that many of us misunderstood the purpose of Islam. What is the purpose of Islam? Islam for many people is just an identity. I am a Muslim, this is my identity. I am an Arab, my identity is what? Being Arab. I am a Pakistani, so this is part of my identity. I am a Muslim, again, this is my identity. We are not taking Islam as a system that saves us from the punishment of Allah Jalla wa Ala. That it is a system that saves us from the hellfire. When the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam was commanded, fasda' bima tu'mar, disclose the da'wah openly. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam stood on a safa, the mountain next to Al-Kaaba. And he said to the people, you believe in what I'm going to say, aren't you? They said, yes. He said, if I were to tell you that there is an army is about to attack you, would you believe in this? They said, yes. He said, فَإِنِّي نَذِيرٌ لَكُمْ بَيْنَ يَدَيْ عَذَابٍ شَدِيدٍ. In other riwayah, أَنذَرْتُكُمُ النَّارِ أَنذَرْتُكُمُ النَّارِ أَنذَرْتُكُمُ النَّارِ. That was the first message the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam is telling who? Is telling the people of Quraysh? No, is telling humanity. So the real contribution of Islam for human beings is what? Is to save them from the punishment of the hellfire. And then to admit them to Jannah. Most importantly, to please their Lord. This is the ultimate aim of Islam. Because we haven't understood the ultimate aim of Islam, that it is to save people from the hellfire, to admit them to Jannah, to please their Lord, and we took Islam as an identity, we started to modernize Islam, liberalize Islam, change Islam, and as far as we can be identified as Muslims, then that is enough. Irrespective of whether that practice or that form of Islam will save us from the hellfire or not. Take, for example, I was giving some other examples related maybe to brothers. Let us take some examples related to sisters, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but we have to say this. For example, now we see different forms of hijab. Again, don't jump into the issue of niqab and covering the face. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just the basic hijab. None of the scholars said that women can wear tight clothes or attractive clothes. None of the scholars. But now we are under the pressure of modernity, under the pressure of the Western lifestyle, we are starting to what? To produce different forms of hijab. And the hijab, in fact, that is worn by many sisters, became what? Became what? A source of attraction. In fact, as many brothers said, and sorry, sisters, okay, many brothers said we find ourselves attracted to the hijabi sisters more than we are attracted to the non-hijabi sisters. Of course, this is because of the brothers, Allah yahdihum, طيب, may Allah guide them. They need to lower their gaze. This is the first point. And this is because of their weakness. Yeah, we have to admit this. But the other most important thing is what? That the sisters, some of them, they are wearing what? Very attractive types of hijab. And many of them, when you discuss the matter with them, and they said, is this hijab? Yes, but is this sister? Think of it as a matter of ibadah, being obedient to Allah Jalla wa Ala. You want to please Allah Jalla wa Ala. You want to maximize your reward in Jannah. You want to save yourself from the hellfire. Is this the right hijab that pleases Allah Jalla wa Ala? Or is this the hijab that proves your identity as Muslim? And now we have this problem, that we are looking for the form of hijab that identifies me as a Muslim. Brothers, sisters, think about it. It's very, very dangerous. Many of us are very active in ta'wa, but it is not because we want to please Allah Jalla wa Ala, but we are active because this is our ethnicity, this is our race, this is who we are as Muslims, this is our identity. No, we are not active in da'wah because of this, because of identity. No, we should be active in da'wah. We should practice any Islamic practices because we want to please Allah Jalla wa Ala. And Allah Jalla wa Ala says in the Quran, تبارك الذي بيده الملك وهو على كل شيء قدير, the one who created life and death, what for? ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا, to test you who is what, who is best in deeds. So, because of this misunderstanding of Islam and the purpose of Islam, the nature of Islam, we started to accept so many forms related to Islam because they can secure our identity, and the real problem is that. So now, if we understand this, and that the main purpose of Islam is to save ourselves from the hellfire, we will not be thinking to modernize Islam, liberalize Islam, whenever there is a chance to do so. Okay. Now, the second point, when we talk about modernity, brothers and sisters, can Islam meet the Western values, or can Islam meet the human rights values? What about those values? Shall we change Islam, or maybe little bit twist Islam in order to fit into the Western lifestyle, or in order to meet, which is a real challenge now, in order to meet the human rights? And many people are talking about this subject. However, very few questioned what? It questioned human rights. We always question Islam, but we never question our products. And human rights is what? The product of human beings. Who define human rights? Who said that to cut the hand of the thief is wrong, but to put the thief behind the bars for 10 years is right? Who said so? Who said that this is humane and this is inhumane? Okay? So this is a question that I would like you to think about it. When you discuss such issues such as human rights, we want you to think about it. Who defined human rights? Who said that this is right and this is wrong? This is one thing, brothers and sisters. The second important point, when we talk about things that can be difficult to be understood, such as the concept of hudud, and we are not trying to escape some maybe concepts that many Muslims are trying to escape, or we think that they are difficult to be understood or difficult to be implemented, etc. When we talk, for example, about hudud, first of all, the question of who defines what is right, what is wrong. The other thing, what is the purpose of hudud? What is the purpose of penal code? All of us, when we think about the purpose of penal code, we always confine our thinking to what? To the dunya. We don't think of the akhirah. But what has hudud to do with the akhirah, with our life after death? We always talk about hudud, that the main purpose of hudud is to produce justice. So if there is no justice, there will be no hudud. Yeah? But who said so? Who said that the main purpose of hudud is to establish justice? Why don't we say that the main purpose of hudud is to free the person from the punishment in the hereafter? What do you think of this? For example, the lady that has committed adultery, she doesn't want justice in the dunya, because the Prophet ﷺ told her, go away. And there is no injustice at that time. But she was worried about what will happen to her in the akhirah. So she said to the Prophet ﷺ, she begged the Prophet ﷺ to do what? To purify her. And this is not a unique case that happened 1400 years ago. I mentioned to some brothers that here with me, wallahi, a sister committed adultery and she was begging me to facilitate for her a way to go to any Muslim country where she can be stoned so she can be free from the punishment in the hereafter that Allah Jalla wa Ala, the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, has described it. I remember this example because last week a lady, same thing, called me and she said, I can't live when I read the hadith about the punishment of those who fornicate and those who commit adultery, and they are going to be put in a tandoori, and the tandoori will be closed, and they will be burned by the hellfire day and night. For thousands of years, I cannot comprehend on this, and I want to go to Allah Jalla wa Ala free from this punishment. So please do me a favor by finding somewhere, somehow, where I can free myself from this kind of punishment. Why do I need to mention this? Because, brothers, many of the Islamic rulings, we think of them in terms of the dunya. We don't think of them in terms of what? In terms of the akhirah. And we think that the real success is the success related to the dunya, and we forgot totally about the akhirah. However, Allah Jalla wa Ala says in the Quran, وَمَنْ أَعْرَضَ عَنْ ذِكْرِي فَإِنَّ لَهُ مَعِيشَةً ضَنْكَا وَنَحْشُرُهُ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ أَعْمَى. Success in the akhirah doesn't mean failure in the dunya. Success in the akhirah means success in the akhirah and success in the dunya. But the ultimate aim, the success that we need to look for, is the success in the akhirah. And once we are successful in the akhirah, Allah Jalla wa Ala will grant us victory in this dunya. The one who turns away from my remembrance, this is the ayah. مَنْ أَعْرَضَ عَنْ ذِكْرِي فَإِنَّ لَهُ مَعِيشَةً ضَنْكَا. First of all, he will find a miserable life here. وَنَحْشُرُهُ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ أَعْمَى. We will resurrect him at the day of resurrection as blind. In the other ayah, Allah Jalla wa Ala described, وَمَنْ يُطِعِ الرَّسُولَ فَأُولَٰئِكَ مَعَ الَّذِينَ أَنْعَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ مِنَ النَّبِيِّينَ وَالصِّدِّيقِينَ وَالشُّهَدَاءِ وَالصَّالِحِينَ. This is very general. That once we implement the law of Allah Jalla wa Ala, Allah Jalla wa Ala will be pleased with us and grants us success in this dunya and success in the akhirah. وَعَدَ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا مِنْكُمْ وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ لَيَسْتَخْلِفَنَّهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ كَمَا اسْتَخْلَفَ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِهِمْ وَلَيُمَكِّنَنَّ لَهُمْ دِينَهُمُ الَّذِي ارْتَضَى لَهُمْ وَلَيُبَدِّلَنَّهُمْ مِنْ بَعْدِ خَوْفِهِمْ أَمْنًا يَعْبُدُونَنِي لَا يُشْرِكُونَ بِي شَيْئًا. This is the promise that Allah Jalla wa Ala has given, that Allah Jalla wa Ala will establish the religion for them, establish the religion for those who being obedient to Allah Jalla wa Ala, establish the religion not in the akhirah but in the dunya. And Allah Jalla wa Ala would change the state of fear that they used to live with a state of security and peace. And once we as Muslims enjoy the peace, the whole world will enjoy the peace. And there will be no peace in the whole world except with the peace of Allah Jalla wa Ala. There will be no light. There will be no light in this globe, on this earth, except with the light of Allah Jalla wa Ala. Allahu nuru as-samawati wal-ard. Mathalu nurihi kamishkatin fiha misbah. Allah is the only light for earth and for heavens. Without the light of Allah Jalla wa Ala, the whole humanity, not only Muslims, the whole humanity will live in dark. And it is our message as Muslims to take humanity from the darkness of being away from Allah Jalla wa Ala to live under the shade of the light of Allah Jalla wa Ala. Jazakum Allahu khayra wa sallallahu wa sallam wa baraka ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in.